Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, Ben. It's really good to have you. Just for the listeners' sake, we're joined today by Ben Towers, who is co-founder of Tahora. It's great to have you join us today, Ben. Thanks so much for taking the time to do this. It's Friday afternoon, and looking forward to this.
No, thank you. I can't wait.
Yeah, cool. And just to get things started, could you give us a bit of insight into Tahora and what that is as a business?
Sure. So Tahora is an employee connection platform. So what all about that is we forget about the employee's job description or what they do professionally. We look at them as an individual within that company. We help connect similar employees up with one another. But our real big focus is about hybrid working. So it's about connecting employees up, you know, based on where they live, over maybe where the office might be, because a lot of people may commute to the office and so on. So what this means is our mobile app, if they're in the hands of employees and they open it up, they put in a bit about them and we then help you find others like you. A few key things about us is all data put into the app is owned by the employee, not the employer, which means that we're a lot more secure. You know, we're not ever passing that on. It means a real safe space just to be you and connect with others.
Excellent, excellent. We'll definitely touch more upon that later on in the show. But, you know, I've been speaking to some of the guys that you work with a few weeks ago, and they were saying that you've got a really interesting kind of, this company was founded really in a really interesting way. And I'd like to hear a little bit about that backstory, if you don't mind.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm 22 years old now. Started in business when I was 11, so 11 years ago.
Wow.
Half my lifetime ago, actually, think about it. But when I first started all of that, that was actually me in my bedroom building websites. And that was because I had a passion just for like fiddling with tech. And I've always enjoyed that. And so that was building websites, like I say. And by the age of 13, I made that into more of a structured business per se, as in me freelancing. And then by the age of 18, kind of really long story short, I then scaled this company out. We did a lot of their marketing, started to move more into that space as you realized the demand. So at this point, there was a big demand for like sort of social media marketing and engaging young people. And I was in at this position where being sort of on the edge of this in a sense of a time we're doing this marketing work was when this real demand and this real kick was happening on social media. It then meant that we were able to offer a service that was, if you want to engage young people, don't engage a company, a marketing agency that say they know young people, engage with an agency that actually know young people because they are the young people.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was like the whole premise sort of behind that. And you know, the company at that point grew to when I was 18, had 26 staff in that business. We were doing some amazing campaigns, brands like Pot Noodle, IHG Hotels, Virgin Racing, Champneys, the government. So quite a range. Yeah. It was always around engaging young people through web and social. And then after leaving that company, and I left that because I got A, a really good offer made, but B, I also just really wanted to go out and do some more things in my life. So obviously I think starting with a company so young meant that I'd always just done work really when growing up. And it was about actually, you know what, I just need to have that time to step away and just to be me for a couple of years and so on. So I went out traveling to Thailand, did a trip for charity out to India, did quite a range of different things as well as lots of consultancy and investments. And then I again got asked by GSK to become a consultant for them after speaking at their leadership conference. And speaking for me has always been something that I've loved. I've always done it since I was about 15 years old. And actually during COVID, I've hated not being able to go to events and speak at conferences because I love just the buzz, the excitement, just telling a story, being able to hopefully inspire and educate people. So that enabled me speak at the GSK leadership conference. After that, then got asked by GlaxoSmithKline if I would become a communications director there for an interim period. So I was like, you know what? I haven't got a company anymore. Yeah, I'm up for the challenge. It'd be a great something to learning curve. So I did that for about 8 months. And whilst I was doing that again, learned a lot. So backstory behind GSK is I was in the consumer healthcare division. So that's their products, things like Sensodyne, Horlicks and so on. And whilst I was doing that, my big role was around this merger with Pfizer, this £10 billion merger. And it's around how can we really then, A, look at the communications within that, but also B, when it comes to uniting the workforce and really make sure people are aware of this massive merger that's going on. After leaving GSK, I did a few things when I was there, and one of them included working very closely with Facebook Workplace. And Facebook Workplace is almost seen as like quite often the platform to connect employees up.
Yeah.
But then after leaving that, I then had a lot of my close friends and family go through some really bad mental health challenges. And I think for me, I then realized, you know what? The workplace isn't supported enough when it comes to like mental health and in the culture. Yep. We have like a select group of people who talk about mental health, and that's fine. But you also have about 80% or so of the workforce who do not want to talk about mental health, that actually need to have that support without realizing it. And there's also the World Health Organization turned around and said, mental health is produced socially, and it's actually a massive link between your social and your connections of people and your mental health. Mm-hmm. So that is then sort of the foundations behind starting Tahora. Now, we never really call Tahora a mental health app or anything like that. But what we do say is if we can connect the workforce up, if we can help you find five or six other colleagues at the company where you work who also love the same football team, or also you go dog walking together or whatever it might be, then the plan is that over time, should you need support or should something happen, you now have five or six really close people you can call out the phone to and go, oh, hi, just can we just chat? Can we go for a walk? I just want to chat to you.
Yeah.
And so that's really important from that side of things. But then the other side of this, from a company perspective, you think about hybrid working, and that, you know, it's now the norm. Like this term has randomly come in from the middle of nowhere, and it's now literally just rolling off our tongue like COVID. You know, it's just, we say it all the time.
Yep.
And you think about the implications of hybrid working. So you and me, like, we're doing this podcast, we're not together in a studio. Maybe pre-COVID it might have been together in a studio. Mm-hmm. And so you think about this change, you know, you're at home, I'm in an office. That is like the typical hybrid working setup where you have different people, different locations. But what this then means is if somebody's at home, they're naturally excluded from the culture. If there's 10 of us in the office and one person not in the office, that one person naturally isn't then part of the banter, the laughs, the fun, the jokes, the maybe some of the opportunities as well. So that's where things like work collaboration tools don't really work for helping that happen. They work for like you and me collaborating and talking about our projects, but they don't really work when it comes to us connecting on a personal social basis. Yeah,
absolutely.
So that's where we started Tahora. So we, like I say, we don't care about what you do in the company as your job. We care about you as a human, your need to connect with others.
You know, I've seen it in very recent times that businesses are starting to take mental health more seriously. I know the business that I work at is taking it very seriously now. And I was just curious to find out whether you think we're on a kind of tipping point now. And also, would you say that COVID has really put mental health under a spotlight?
You know, there's the sayings that COVID is minor compared to the mental health epidemic that we're going to face following all of this.
Yeah.
This forced isolation for 18 months.
Crazy.
Of people in some shape or form. You know, that is like, that's unheard of in mm-hmm. like human history. And that is, and you think about what that's then created. So there's this saying that I absolutely love, and it's we're the most connected yet disconnected generation. And, you know, it's this idea that you and I could have all of these followers, all of these people available to us on Microsoft Teams or available to us on Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn, whatever it might be.
Mm.
But in reality, do we truly know those people? There was an article in Forbes by a graduate who just said, I do not want to be known as a resource on the end of an email. But that's the fear we face when it comes to hybrid working, that these people just get put on the end of an email and just go, you ping over a message to some random picture and name to say, please do this document for me. And we lose this sense of humanity to a certain extent. And then when you bring this all down to mental health and you start to realize what is going to mean, it's going to mean that because of this disconnection, because of this fear that we're now living just to live our everyday life, of course, we're going to have massive mental health challenges across society. So you mentioned this tipping point. I actually think this isn't a tipping point of choice. This is a tipping point of force. This is a tipping point where companies have got to a point where up until now, it's been a bit like, oh, you know what? We'd love to do it because it will help our, you know, employer value proposition. It'll make us look better as an employer. Reality is now, it's not about looking better as an employer. It's about maintaining your workforce, about keeping your staff and not leaving to go somewhere else who do care about their mental health. So I do think this tipping point is crucial in like the life cycle of employee journeys and employee health and well-being. And so that's one thing I've seen interesting. But then the second thing has been down to, there's so much being done on the preventative, also on the treatment side of things. So, you know, a lot of companies now get putting into place their EAPs, and it's a doctor you can call up anytime to get support, mm-hmm. or put into place ability to speak to therapists and so on. Now, they're amazing. And, you know, for me, myself, I go to therapists on a regular basis just because I like to, just to chat and just to get things out of my system. Yeah. But then you think about behind that, this preventative side of things, this activity of just connection and being around great people, we're still losing that in society. So that's why for us at the Hall, we're really just trying to say, how can we just make that a focus for everyone and relate connection to your mental health? Because so often we look at mental health as being, you know, meditation and that sort of thing, and we forget that it's just about sometimes the great people around us.
Yeah, and what Tahora is doing essentially is, you know, connecting people, but in a really natural way. You know what I mean? Like in the past,
exactly that.
Yeah, in the past, I mean, in the past, you know, you'd see on job adverts, you know, they have regular team nights out and things like that. And, you know, it's all very well and good, but this is far more of a natural relationship builder, basically. And I think that's absolutely amazing. But I mean, I've got a question. I mean, like we were saying, COVID has really put a spotlight on this, and there must be a lot of businesses who are really looking to, you know, employ a strategy to invest in the wellbeing initiative. And I was just wondering about what your advice would be to those businesses who are looking to do that.
Yes, if a company's looking to, you know, look at a strategy to really support their workforce and, you know, think about this post-COVID world, I'd say a lot of companies that I've spoken to, and I'm not going to name and shame or anything like that, but I think a lot of the times we find is companies putting people strategies that they think work for the HR leadership team,
yeah,
and work for them, and don't actually take into account the wider workforce. And that's not as simple as putting out a survey and asking people, oh, what sort of support can we offer you?
Yeah.
Because that is easily manipulated in the sense of, like, if you've just spoken about EAP, of course they're going to mention an EAP. Yeah. So it's really hard to get true accurate results. But it's about actually truly understanding the workforce, having more detailed calls and chats with key people to go, they're looking to do this. What do you think? But I also would say it's about understanding that employee experience. So many times companies just chuck random apps and services and solutions onto this, try and patch up this problem and put plasters over everything.
Absolutely.
It's about going, what is the core challenge we're facing here? What is the core thing we really want to address? And how can you bring this whole employee experience together, but also give it a real consumer feel? So one of the big challenges that I find with a lot of workplace strategies and a lot of workplace ways of thinking is the exact word workplace. We suddenly in our mind think about, like, the fact we have to use a business style tool. But the reality is you and I are used to consumer tools. We're used to being able to order taxis in minutes through Uber. We used to be able to food and order it in seconds, and it's suddenly turning up. And
yeah,
we have more access to information than ever before on our phones. Now, I say all of that because what this then means is, when you think about it, we're then implementing workplace solutions that are slow to load, built on technology that you look at and you just think, oh my word, my phone is about 100 years ahead of this.
Yeah.
And then you start to wonder, why are these strategies not hitting? Why are these strategies not making an impact? Well, it's because people don't want to open them. Because if I'm having to open it and I just feel like it's dull, dated, and not enjoyable, then of course I'm not going to use it, because I don't feel like it relates to me and my level of technology expertise. And then you think about this changing shift in regards to technology patterns, and it is now the norm to get your new iPhone every single year. But it's now the norm that when September hits and out comes Apple talk about their new phones, October, you're in the queue, you've got your phone and you've got it in. So you've got this latest piece of tech in your pocket, yet you've got this black and white near enough system that is told to manage your well-being and people strategy. So that's a big thing which I really say underpinning all of this is just to really have that thought process behind, is this an enjoyable experience? Are people who are used to this, you know, real fast-paced tech and environment able to engage with it, but without disengaging those who aren't used to that?
Yeah, so I mean, with the app, I mean, obviously user experience has got to be absolutely spot on. And also it's got to cater for everybody, basically. People that might not be aware of technology, people that might be like technophobes, and then also people who are like, you know, young and obsessed with technology, you know, it's got to cater for everyone. So how did you go about, you know, designing that user experience and, you know, basically catering for everybody, I guess my question is.
Yeah, so we saw user experience as our most challenging, but in a sense of like our most invested part of the whole business.
Right.
Because if the user experience is rubbish, the business could be amazing, could be a gold mine, but people don't use it. So we really invested a lot into that, from the upfront UX UI strategy, but also even now. So even within the team, we're heavily weighting on product than we are on anything else within the business. Because I'm a big believer that a great product naturally creates excitement, naturally creates talk, naturally starts to get things moving because people start to talk about it. Me and you on a Zoom call suddenly go, oh, I'm using Tahora, you should use it. And if it's a great product, it will naturally have that growth. And so that's a big thing we've really invested in. And you know, that's why we're seeing great success. You know, some amazing companies that use Dahua include like Google, NatWest Bank, Coutts Bank. And they have these amazing companies in the Metropolitan Police as well. So these real like leading employers across the UK who, for them, it's about making sure that they have a tool which really resonates with the employees. And so we had to make sure, you know, as a company, we're only a couple of years old. So to get contracts, you know, of that size and the work of employers of that size, we had to make sure we were different and stand out. And for us, it was about the user experience and that engagement factor.
Yeah, I mean, you just mentioned you're only a couple of years old, but then in the almost the same sentence, you mentioned these huge clients that you're working with. I mean, you've scaled so quickly, that's unbelievable. I mean, how did you plan for that scale? I mean, how did you prepare for that?
I wouldn't say plan for it, but I think for me, I've always been very ambitious in the sense of, so if I don't feel like we're getting things moving quickly, I get frustrated. Yeah. And that happens both with me in my personal life, my professional life, everything about like me personally. I'm a speed person in the sense of I want to make sure things are moving. I want to be able to wake up and feel like, you know what, by the time I'm going to bed tonight, things have happened. Things have got moving, new people have been reached out to, new calls have happened, new demos have been put in, new development things have been hit. And I think that is really important from a culture perspective. And we're really glad, you know, when it comes to our recruiting, we've had to really make sure we're recruiting the people who are really up for that and up for this challenge and this speed, knowing that, you know what, this is going to be a really quick journey. This is going to be a time where we're going to put in a lot of work to make this possible. We're not going to do like silly hours or anything like that. I'm not a believer in enforcing any of that side of things, but just realizing that, you know, when I'm at work, I'm really putting in everything in, because what we're then going to do is this back to the original story I mentioned around, if we're connecting up employees, we're supporting their mental health. Mm. And if that drives us all. And I think for me, I always wake up and I think, you know what? If a pace isn't quick enough, there are people somewhere in a company who are walking into work or going logging into their computer in the morning and feel lonely, feel disconnected. And I think for me, that's a horrible emotion to think that people are feeling like that when I'm almost sitting there feeling like, you know what? Fingers crossed, we've got this tool which can solve that. And so then I almost feel like, you know what, I almost want to do everything I can to get it in the hands of them as quickly as possible.
Yeah, incredible. And it's absolutely amazing. You know, the more I'm listening to this and the more I hear about the business, because you mentioned something there, which was connecting employees supports mental health. And that is so true. And I think a lot of businesses overlook that. And it's a very simple fact. The happiness at work does come from building relationships, I guess.
Definitely. And I also think that gone are the days where you can chuck a slide in your office and everyone's happy.
Yeah.
You know, you think about it, a few years ago, that was always a talk of a town, you know, sticking a slide, sticking a beer tap, sticking a few things and everyone's happy. You know, it was so much more to that now. And I think that's where companies are having to really awake and actually realize, you know what, we need to do something about this. And interestingly, so one of our investors, so he's a former HR director of BP, so a real senior people leader, you know, FTSE 100 company. And he always used to say down, you know, supporting your employees' mental health community connection is not a nice to have, it's a duty. Mm. It's the responsibility of your employer to make sure that their employees have good health, have good well-being, and feel like they're connected and supported.
Yeah.
And so I think so often we just think of it as a nice to have, but reality is this is the norm. This is not required. And if we're going to make hybrid working something that becomes the norm ongoing and becomes this new business normal, then we need to invest in this. We need to make this something for an employee feels that they are supported, feels that they are connected to their workforce. And if they're not then going to leave and join a company who are more office-based when they actually have that more physical connection.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just thinking about, you know, if a company doesn't deploy like a mental wellbeing strategy, what kind of backlash do you think they can expect from that?
I think the backlash is pretty blunt in the effects, in a sense of they're going to lose staff.
Yeah, 100%.
And that is going to happen extremely quickly. We have just gone through over the last year one of the biggest shifts in employees ever in the history of the UK. We've seen more people changing jobs than ever before. Mm-hmm. That's crazy given the fact we've got such a big economic uncertainty.
Yeah.
But why is that happening? It's happening because over the last 18 months, my employer has not supported me. My employer has not done, you know, has not reached out to me to ask how I'm feeling, or, you know, brought us all together and celebrated our differences and how we're all one great team that we can all work together.
Yeah.
So my employer's not done that during the hardest year or 18 months of my life, you know, in regards to lockdowns and restrictions. then why am I going to stay in this company? Why am I going to still be here? And when it comes to ongoing beyond COVID, you've even got to think about it. And if you do not invest in your connection, your community of your workforce, your culture, and really invest in that and make it a business critical part of your business, then even when it comes down to the day-to-day tasks of your team, say I'm doing outbounding for sales and I'm messaging people on LinkedIn, for example, and let's say that I've got a target of 100 a day and I'm doing 100 a day. If I feel like this culture is amazing, I feel like I'm supported and feel like I'm loved where I work, I'll push up to 150 because I feel like I'm going to really put in everything. I'm going to really make, you know, make this a place where I love it. I'm going to make it a place that I'm going to put my heart and soul into.
Yeah.
If it's a place where I don't feel like I'm getting value, I don't feel like I'm loved, I don't feel like that my managers and people leadership, my colleagues care about me, then I'll do the 100 and that'll be it. I'll meet my KPIs and that'll be done. So what's going to happen is if you're a company who does not invest in your employees' mental health and well-being, you're going to be in a situation where the employees you have are going to be those who just meet their KPIs and that's it. You're never going to get overperformers. You're never going to get people who really believe in the culture and community and believe in a great place to be. You're going to get people who just want to turn up, do 9 to 5 and leave. And if that's what you want as an employer, then, you know, go on and do that. But if you really want to have this fun, collaborative space to grow and people to really be them, then you need to invest in it.
Yeah, and actually, to all the business directors out there that might be listening and not really taking care about this, it affects the bottom line, essentially, doesn't it?
Oh, massively. There's a massive link between, you know, staff connectivity and business performance. And I think the hard part about affecting your bottom line is we so easily say affects your bottom line. And it's hard to quantify that because, like, especially mental health, like, it's across everything. It's across productivity, and productivity is not a line in your P&L. Productivity is split across everything. So it's hard to see that, which is why it's taking people leaders just to be aware and awake to the problem to go, you know what, we need to make this change because I'm aware that that is actually something that's spread across my business.
Absolutely. And it's something that, you know, I think every single business should have a mental health awareness, you know, campaign. But I just want to find out what should be the goals of a business when creating a mental health well-being strategy? What are the goals there?
I would say a few things. I think the first thing is to empower the employees to really lead, create, collaborate on it, to really empower your team to do that. And I think the goals are as simple as people just walk in and feel like they're loved and they're valued and they're supported. Yeah. I think that's the key thing behind it. I think it's really hard to measure number of mental health like occurrences or challenges that come up because, you know, there's so many other factors that could link into that. What you can do is, even if I'm struggling in my personal life or outside of work, I still feel like I can come to work because I feel like it's a great place to be.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the key things of really doing. I'd say the key number one way of doing that is by really focusing on getting the employees to help you lead on that. I think it's not something that you or I could answer by now. It's something for your employees know more than anyone else about how to make it possible.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, do you think mental health awareness gets brushed under the carpet a lot because you can't see it? You can't physically see mental health issues. It's kind of internal, isn't it, for the individual?
Yeah, I think it gets brushed under the carpet a lot because A, you can't see it, but B, I think often it's seen as a hassle.
Yeah.
Because, so if you were to break your leg and a doctor says 2 weeks recovery and you're fine, then that's right, but you get what I mean. And if we're to say that, then that's fine. For my employer's mind, I have now not got that employee for 2 weeks and they're back in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
If you were to say to me, you know what, I'm really struggling with mental health, I feel really depressed and to have some time off, that employer doesn't know. Employer doesn't know, okay, is that 2 weeks? Is that a month? Is that 6 weeks? Is that one day? What is it? And so it's really hard to quantify, which I think then makes it that hard part of it makes it hard for a company to then want to invest and want to like truly support when it's quite scary because you don't quite know what could happen. But I think now we're starting to realize that is the easy part in comparison to everything else.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I just think finally, Ben, I've got one final question here. It's just around what we can expect from Tahora in the future. Obviously, you mentioned you're quite a young business. You've been going for a couple of years now, but you've already made some big waves in the industry. And I'm just interested to see where this is going to go.
Yeah, so we're growing rapidly as a business. So had 3 people start this week, 2 more start next week. So we've got loads of people joining on, which is amazing. And from that side of things, it's it gets a bit of a recruitment nightmare of trying to get people on so quickly. But yeah. I think for us, that's one thing, you know, we're trying to really sort out our own company culture and get things in line as we grow and quickly make sure that everyone's happy, everyone's always supported and so on. So that's one thing that we are really focused on from day one and still actively focused on. The other side of this has been obviously growing the platform. So trying to get into more and more corporates, you know, we work with companies anything up from 250 or more employees. So just really getting in the hands of more and more employees, improving the app, improving the experience for these employees, and also helping employers, because a lot of the companies we work with, they won't have a community or culture strategy necessarily. So they're used to Horror as a way to really do that. And we're up for that, because for us, we're a big believer in our platform and our users and the companies love it. So for us, it's actually about working with more of these companies to help them launch these strategies and help them see the impact.
It's been absolutely amazing. It's brilliant. Been brilliant to chat to you, Ben. It's fascinating, really. What an amazing product you've got. I've said amazing about 10 times. There must be another descriptive word out there. It's been brilliant to chat to you. I'm really impressed. Keep up the amazing work, and thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me today.
No, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Ben. Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.